Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for June the 11th, 2020. This is episode number 11. Today, among other things, we'll be talking about the Tesla Cybertruck making its public debut. The Volkswagen ID.4 has been accidentally revealed, and the Tesla Model S has achieved 402 miles of EPA range. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EVs editor and the Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Logney, multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Outer Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. And he also puts together the super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that notifications bell. So we are not streaming live on YouTube for this episode. Sorry, we're still trying to work that out. So you can leave comments and questions on today's show on the Inside EVs podcast post or the YouTube comment section, or even on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread, where we have every episode available for your enjoyment. So, gentlemen, welcome. And we have lots to talk about today. But before we get into the big news, let's see, what do we have charging up in our driveways today? I believe last week we had a virtual situation with you, Kyle. And this week you have a little bit of other news from that for us?
Yeah, virtual situation. I like that. Well, we spoke last week a little bit about going to Ford's Performance Technical Center in Concord, North Carolina, heart of NASCAR country, where we were able to drive the Mustang Mach-E virtually, which was kind of interesting because, you know, Ford's like, hey, come and be the first people to drive this car. And it was virtual. And so, you know, of course, we approached it with some like, is this going to feel real? But no, it was mind blowing how accurate and realistic this simulator was. Live now, as of yesterday, at the time of this recording, on MotorOne.com, it's right in the front page header if you're catching this soon, is the virtual first drive of the Mustang Mach-E. And you can see all of our thoughts that, you know, I put together on the driving impressions, the simulator. We'll have more rolling out from them. But we've had a lot of Mustang Mach-E news recently. And it's going to be a really cool car based on all my impressions so far. So I'm pretty hyped about it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this. So this morning there was a little bit of Mustang Mach-E news. And was that part of your show about the range predictions?
We actually didn't talk about it during my time there. We spoke a lot about the Copilot 360 stuff that was announced yesterday, I guess. Right yesterday, 6 a.m., the embargo lifted on that. The Copilot 360 is Ford's essentially competitor to Autopilot or GM Super Cruise, which is hands-off, and they advertise this as hands-off and driver monitoring done with a camera, and it uses the infrared spectrum, and there's multiple cameras if you're blocking the wheel. It's a great idea. We'll see how well it works in practice, but I'm actually testing their earlier version of the system in the Ford Escape Hybrid this week. It's not the plug-in one. It's pretty much the same car, but without the plug-in stuff. So I think it's going to be pretty good. But their lane centering is insane in this. So Ford's really doing a lot with driver assistance tech. And I'm excited to see what this Copilot 360 Plus with the prep package, all the cool things will be like in the real world. And they're launching it only for Mustang Mach-E to start. Obviously, it'll make its way to other products, but just for their electric car, that's pretty cool.
Sure. Elevates the electric car right up there. That's a one offering, all electric offering at the moment. So it's kind of weird. I find that they're advertising the hands-off part of it after, you know, Tesla drivers and Tesla itself gets criticized so much for, you know, using autopilot without your hands on the wheel. Like, it's a big deal. Your hands on the wheel. It's like constant messaging.
Well, the reason you can't do that in a Tesla is because the only human machine interface, HMI, from the user to the Tesla. The only way for the Tesla to know what the user is doing is by a little torque sensor in a steering wheel. And for users who are not always concerned about their personal safety, this is great because it allows you to do whatever you want while you're driving. You can text, you can fall asleep, you can, and all you little need is like a, you know, something on the steering wheel that's causing torque to tell it that you're paying attention, which I think is really insanely dangerous. What this system is doing is it's monitoring the driver with visuals. And this is something that's needed across, you know, the entire ADAS systems going forward. I think torque sensors need to go away. The cars need to know what the driver is doing. Because think about how many Tesla owners we see with little weights over the steering wheel. And, you know, all it takes is for the system to mess up once. And I'm not knocking it. Autopilot's amazing, but you need driver monitoring with visuals. So Ford has cracked that. And same with Super Cruise. I mean, this isn't unique technology. I just think they're implementing it in a way that will be much better. There's a huge focus on knowing what state the car will be in at any given time. So you'll have little graphics on the screen that look like this. You'll see it right there on the screen on the YouTube. And essentially it shows hands off the steering wheel. I got it. And this requires the roads to be pre-mapped. They'll have 100,000 miles in US and Canada of highways mapped. So pretty much any major highway, and they'll go around constantly improving that. You know, the rebuttal to the pre-mapping HD mapping thing is, well, autopilot's taking every single situation as a brand new one with prior knowledge. I think that may make sense for a scalable approach. But when we're talking just about functionality with today's technology that you'll be able to experience in the next few years, I'm fine with this pre-mapping thing. And I'll make one last point about it because I know I'm going on. But over-the-air updates to this system to improve its functionality over time will be key. As of now, I think the Mustang Mach-E, again, it hasn't hit start of production, but it is the only car other than Tesla that's capable of over-the-air updating every single module.
Right, because in a vehicle you have, you know, your infotainment, you have your controller, your motor controls. There's a whole bunch of different systems going on, and Tesla can't update any of those systems. But because of the way they're engineered, traditional automakers haven't been able to do that. They can update like the telematics. Yeah.
A lot of it's just for security purposes as well. Sure. I mean, try convincing a German brand to like saying you can now come in, you know, and mess everything up through software and hacking stuff. I mean, that's really tough for them. But we'll see a trend going towards this. You know, I imagine Lucid, for example, will have this type of functionality and others going forward. So, you know, we'll see. I think NIO actually has a lot of over-the-air update capability. So I could be wrong. NIO might have this same functionality.
Right. Well, Tom, you know a bit about NIO. Do you know anything about the other ADAS system works?
Yeah, you know, I don't know to what extent actually that they can, you know, what the over-the-air updates can manipulate. I know it can, you know, it's a smart system and it definitely can, you know, change key modules. But I don't know if it goes as deep as what Tesla does right now and what Ford is going to be doing. But it's good that this was brought up. Next time I chat with the NIO folks, I'm going to ask them, and I'll know for the next time.
So while we have you on camera there, what were you driving this week? I believe you had the Kona Electric still?
Yeah, it's like Hyundai week for me. I had the Kona EV actually for a week, and the day before they were coming to pick it up, I got an email that said, hey, do you want a new 2020 Ioniq? We just got them in. So, yeah, of course. And that's what I actually have right now, and doing some 70-mile-an-hour highway range tests and also recording the charging curves on both the vehicles. So I should have a bunch of Hyundai posts up on Inside EVs. I'm not going to reveal too much, only that I guess, you know, Hyundais are extremely efficient vehicles. I mean, other than Tesla, Hyundai's the only other manufacturer that has seemed to really crack this efficiency code, and both cars are extremely efficient. I got really close to the EPA range rating on the Kona in my 70-mile-an-hour highway range test, which is fantastic. If you can drive 70 miles an hour, nearly get the EPA range rating. But the one thing I will say is the Ioniq beat the EPA range rating driving at a constant 70 miles an hour.
Wow.
Which just like, I'm recording myself as I'm driving it, you know, for the videos. And I'm like saying, I can't believe that this is going to happen, but it looks like it's going to happen. So that was pretty amazing. I averaged 4.5 miles per kilowatt hour at 70 miles an hour. Incredibly efficient vehicle. And, you know, Hyundai's to be commended on that. You know, it's, you know, we're knocking the German manufacturers, Audi and Porsche, about, you know, the efficiencies of the vehicles. And, you know, Tesla seemed to be the only one that was really putting such an enormous emphasis on it. But no, Hyundai's been, and Kia to a lesser extent, I think also. But Hyundai's really done something here with it. It's an incredibly efficient vehicle. I think people are going to really like this vehicle when they get it.
Just remind us on your Model 3 test a couple of weeks ago. Was that 4.25 miles per kilowatt hour?
Exactly, Martin. 4.25 miles per kilowatt hour. Okay. I went 290 miles at 70 miles an hour. You know, you can't knock that. I mean, it was EPA range rated when I got it at 310 miles. And, you know, I only came up 20 miles short of the EPA range rating. And, you know, I was gushing all over Tesla when I did that in my video and, you know, proclaiming them to be, you know, the efficiency kings. And I've got to come back a couple weeks later now and kind of eat a little crow and say, wait a minute, you know, Hyundai's got something going on here too, because this car is incredibly efficient.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting behind the wheel of the Ioniq electric. I'm supposed to get one soon as well. I wonder if it's the same one you have, but they seem to be pretty cool. Have you noticed any issues with the air cooled battery? Because it has a fan like the old Souls did, but there's no liquid thermal management, right?
So yeah. The one thing that I have noticed about the battery management is that Hyundai has dramatically slowed down the DC fast charge rate, which is super unfortunate. The Hyundai Kona EV can charge at up to, the specs say 77 kilowatts, but I don't think many owners have ever reported more than 75 kilowatt. But
I've only ever seen 76. Yeah.
Yeah. That's splitting hairs. But the Ioniq, is under 50 kilowatts. I don't know exactly what the maximum is yet. I did two quick DC fast charge sessions. I didn't do the full 0 to 80% recording like I'm going to do today, actually right after this. But the crazy thing is I maxed out at 23 kilowatts on 150 kilowatt DC fast charger twice. Like I said, I didn't do the full session, but I charged up to like 35%, I think, and I didn't see more than 23 kilowatts. So it's you know, where it's a highly efficient car, but it's not a road trip car. The DC fast charge rate is terrible. I can't wait to get out there a little later today and record the whole session and see exactly what is. But I think it's going to take, you know, over an hour to get to 80%, and it's only a 38 kilowatt hour battery pack.
That almost kills all the benefits of that efficiency right there, because you just can't use it on a trip. So, you know, you're just driving around town now. I mean, I know a guy, Chris Maxwell, here in North Carolina, that has an Ioniq electric and like drives it everywhere. And I you know, every post it's, oh, I'm at this charger. I'm like, well, I would have been four past those chargers and charging at 200 kilowatt, you know, or 250 at a version 3. And it's just, there's this huge disparity between, like, some manufacturers are doing things so well, like efficiency with Hyundai, and others are, like, even a Porsche Taycan, terrible efficiency, but they have the charging figured out. So we need some sort of this middle-of-the-road balance between the two.
Yeah, you absolutely almost assume that everything is a forward march in terms of progress. And in the new Ioniq, the AV system, the display is way better. You can now do a split-screen display. The inside of the car is so much better than that original one. But if you want to do fast charging, you're better off buying a 3-year-old used one that's just come off lease than buying a brand new one. At least it'll be like for like. You'll still do the same distance because it'll charge a lot quicker. So we always think that EVs are, there's that relentless march of progress forwards. And it's always a bit weird when they release a new model and actually the charging characteristics are worse than the one it replaced.
Right.
Yeah. I was super surprised when I plugged in and was just, you know, I walked away for like 20 minutes and came back figuring I could head home. This was after doing the full drive to zero range test. And I was like at like 18%. I was like, what's going on here? You know, did it shut off? You know?
Yeah.
And then I was watching it in, like, in amazement. And I'm like, I can't believe it. I wanted to actually record that session, but some of the early Electrify America charging stations have terrible screens. Mm. You can't record it. You can't even see it if you like put your face against the screen. So, you know, it was a wasted opportunity. I had the car down to zero. It was perfect to do it, but I'm going to head out today and do that right after the podcast.
Right on. We'll be looking forward to seeing the results of that. So we have to keep the show pretty tight today. Martin has lots of podcasting things to do. So let's move on to the stories. And
such an important man.
Yeah. The big thing this morning is the Tesla Cybertruck is going to make its public debut in Los Angeles. So June 20 to 27th, that is soon. That's tomorrow, starting tomorrow for the week. At the Peterson Automotive Museum in Los Angeles, it'll be on display in the lobby. And you know, if you have a if you're one of the 700,000 or whatever people that has a reservation, you have it. You can now actually go and see it in the metal, literally in the metal, and see, you know, get a feel of what it looks like. We've seen lots of pictures and videos, but there's nothing like standing in front of something to really give you, you know, a good impression of. You know, do I want to drive this? Do I want to be seen driving this? The Cybertruck styling is, you know, as you know, a little way out there. But yeah. And but while you're there.
Sorry, go ahead, Dominic. Go ahead. I apologize.
No. Oh, okay. I was just going to say, while you're there too, don't just stop in the lobby. You can go up to the second floor and there's an alternating currents exhibit. And they also have the Model S prototype and a Roadster on display there.
So they have, I believe, two Roadsters, and there's a secret part of the Peterson called the Vault. It's underneath. You basically, you go in, you have to pay. I forget what it was, but it's worth any amount of money. And you go downstairs real deep, and they have a room. You're not allowed to take any photography, nothing like this, stuffed full of cars. I was just there not long ago. You have to go.
That's amazing.
It is the most amazing cars. Electric, not electric. You know, they have, you know, $30-40 million cars down there, all the way from movie cars like Saddam Hussein's limo, just like weird stuff. And it's just the most amazing experience. So go to the Peterson. They have plenty of EV charging. They have DC fast chargers in the parking lot. You go in the vault and you just spend as much time as you can soaking in every single car.
I would go and see this if it was near me. And I would, at the drop of a hat, go and see the Cybertruck if it was local to me or a short journey away on display. Like, we know that when it makes a public debut, whether it's out filming with Leno or doing something, there's so many videos on Instagram and Twitter just from people following it being, oh my goodness, look at this. It's so striking. And now I only heard the news yesterday that they're putting it on display for a week there. There are going to be queues round the block. And obviously in this kind of period where a lot of public buildings are having to keep people further apart and social distancing, that's going to make the queues even longer because they can't just fling the doors open and welcome the masses inside. So it's definitely going to generate headlines for the size of the queue because they can't allow everybody in at the same time. But also just because, like, that's such a cool thing to go and see the Cybertruck. If I was local, I'd absolutely go and do that. This is going to definitely be a big PR win. For not that they need any more PR around it, but it's very clever stuff. They're going to do really well out of all the attention over the next week is my prediction.
So speaking of the Cybertruck, the factory, the what are they going to call it? They're going to call it maybe the Terra Factory, Texas Terra Factory. So there was a couple of outlets who published stories yesterday saying that Tesla had purchased land in Austin, Texas for the factory. It has not. Musk replied to a tweet about the story saying that Tesla has an option to purchase this land, but has not exercised it. And later he responded to another tweet asking if Tesla was still in the mix. And he responded with, we are considering several options. But so TechCrunch reported that the application was filed by the Colorado River Project LLC. And I looked this, I'm looking up, and it is indeed a new subsidiary of Tesla. It was it was just got a charter date of like 5/2020. So like just the 20th of May, this I don't call it a shell company or a proxy company showed up, and they were using that to try to keep everything under wraps, you know. But anyway, but it got leaked out anyway through the controller's, Texas controller's office. And so they are reporting that Tesla is trying to receive up to $68 million in a tax abatement over a 10-year period. That's part of their, you know, they want to get a good deal on this land and the operations there. So, and they have to do it through the school board sort of area instead of like a county. It's all run through the school board area. And yeah, so they're negotiating with them, and they've made the application. And just to apply for that, they had to put down like $150,000. So that was kind of interesting.
It's an expensive application, isn't it? Just to put an application in. I wonder what they get for their $150,000. You know, this doesn't suit Tesla, rather, to have any kind of confirmation that they're going to be in Texas. They're going to be in Texas because yeah. We know that Elon, like their MO, through everything they've done, even from the original location in California, is they like a beauty parade with different areas trying to attract them. I've been convinced for ages that it's going to be Texas. There's no doubt in my mind that it will be. It just doesn't suit them to have other outlets running the story that it's a done deal, because they're going to want the best possible deal from Texas. So if it's not looking like there's any competitors in the negotiation, they'll get a worse deal. And everywhere they've gone, they've managed to cut a spectacular deal, whether that's China or Berlin or now in Texas. They've certainly, like, but it's all big business does this, by the way.
Right. I looked around in Oklahoma to see whether or not the Colorado River project had done anything there, or maybe Tesla had another shell company or proxy company that was trying to, you know, make the same kind of arrangement in the and it's also Oklahoma area, and I couldn't find anything. So I kind of think they're still, you know, very Texas focused. So this application that also had a few other, there's a big document online you can download. It's like 50 some pages, I believe. And within that, if you read through, you can find out that the Tesla will agree to build a 4 to 5 million square foot factory that would employ more than 5,000 workers. And most of those people would be making less than $75,000 or $74,000, which is, I guess, pretty good. I don't know, for Austin. And the location is southeast of Austin, off of Texas 130. And it's a collection of parcels of land, and it makes up 2,100 acres, which is bigger than the Berlin Gigafactory site. So you have any thoughts about this, Tom?
Well, you know, I'm with Martin here. I think most of us have that same opinion that Tesla's just trying to fine-tune the deal now. I think for a long time, I believe that Tesla was going to end up in Texas for the Cybertruck. It just seems like it's a perfect fit. And, you know, they're just doing their due diligence and trying to squeeze out every last penny they can from the taxpayers and get the best deal they can. Now, doesn't mean that Tesla's a bad partner in that regards. All companies do that. They play different states, different areas against each other to try to get the best deal. I think that's what they're doing. But when the dust settles, I think we're going to see Cybertrucks, you know, rolling out of Terra Factory in Tesla in Texas for sure.
Right. So just while we're on the topic of electric pickup trucks, the Ford F-150 electric, we'll only see that in about 2 years from now. But the gas version of this new generation of Ford electric or Ford pickup F-150 is going to be uncovered next week on the 25th. So if you want to get an idea of what the electric version will look like, just look at that next week and picture like a different grill. Maybe.
Am I the only one let down by that being 2 years away, or am I being greedy?
It seems like it's pushed back. It seems like they're, man, I think that Chevrolet might even beat them getting their pickup truck.
Just seems like 2 years, like they've been talking about it for so long, and then to revise it backwards just seems, I don't know. I'm let down by that, but maybe that's what it takes to put an electric F-150 on the road.
I think your mic is a little bit low, Martin, by the way.
Sorry about that. I'm let down by that, but maybe that's just what it takes. I don't know.
Yeah. But on the same day as the F-150 is being revealed the Lordstown vehicle is also going to be shown. The Lordstown Endurance electric pickup truck. Yeah, will also make its debut on the 25th. So that's going to be interesting. Try to get some audience. I think the F-150 is going to suck a lot of oxygen up in the press. But, you know, kudos to them if they can get some traction with it, because it's a decent looking vehicle. It's 250 miles of range, and it's got the in-wheel motors, a $52,000 truck. You have any thoughts on this, Kyle?
Well, I'd love to get Tom's opinion, actually, because I think what we're seeing now is if we pretend that electric vehicles didn't exist, and basically in the U.S. you had the F-150, the Ram 1500, and the Silverado, and then, of course, maybe like the Tundra somewhere in there and some other stuff. But there was pretty much no way you could start a new company and really compete on any scale with the big manufacturers. And what we're seeing now is Lordstown, Rivian, potentially Nikola. Like, you have all of these new startup companies that are coming into the pickup scene, and it's just going to change the entire game purely because of what powers the car. What's your opinion on this, Tom? Do you think this is a good thing, a bad thing? Where's your head on this?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a reason why no automobile company before Tesla, you know, there's been no new American automobile companies in the last 100 years. I think Chrysler was the last one in like 1928 to start and actually survive, you know, because it's incredibly hard to do. And I think what we're seeing is there's not a lot of, in the U.S. at least, new car companies that are starting. But we're seeing all these pickup truck companies starting, you know, Lordstown, Attilus, Bollinger, Nikola, you know, Rivian, you know, and they're trying to exploit the fact that, you know, we buy about 3 million pickup trucks a year here in the U.S. and not every company makes a pickup truck. So there's a little bit less competition. You've got these three companies that really control, well, maybe four if you want to put in Toyota, control the market. So if they could just get a little piece of that, that's a way for them to survive. So yeah, in that regards, it's not surprising that all these new companies are all making pickups. Now, they're not going to all make it. And you know, the companies that get to market first with a decent product are going to be the ones that survive. Once Ford and GM, and even Tesla with the Cybertruck and Rivian, for instance, once these companies all have electric pickups on the market, it's going to be super hard for another small startup to come. You know, and I think that's why Lordstown is on such an aggressive timeline. I mean, they're going to show that we haven't even seen the production or a real working version of the truck. They're going to show it now. And then literally six months later, it's going to be in production. You know, that I don't know how that works. You know, the manufacturers take years to engineer and, you know, validate vehicles. So, you know, I mean, I get what they're doing, and I think that they have to be on an incredibly aggressive timeline. They have to get out ahead of everybody, or they'll just get swamped by the big guys. But I'm just still trying to figure out how this works, where they're producing cars in January.
Well, they may not be reliable cars, but they'll be producing some kind of cars.
I hope it works, and I hope that, you know, they've been doing so much behind the scenes, and they're kind of, you know, keeping everything really close to the vest, and they've been beta testing trucks for months now, and you know, or you know, we hope that's the case. So it's an interesting vehicle. We love the four wheel in hub motors. It's got some great specs. It's got a good price. That's really important. The $52,000 starting price isn't some astronomical figure. It's going to undercut what Rivian's coming to market with. But the timing is super important. One of the things that I always go back to is, if you guys remember Coda, when Coda started, I mean, when they started making their car, no one was making electric cars. And if none of the OEMs decided they were going to make an electric car, Coda would have survived, even though it was a crappy car, because we would have had no options. But then, you know, I remember
they were just so boring.
I know, but Kyle, if there were no other options, we would have bought them. The people that wanted electric cars would have bought them. But then all of a sudden, Nissan, like out of nowhere, announced the Leaf. And it was like, all right, that's it. Coda's dead. You know, it's like
for the better.
Yeah. You know, even if it was a good car, they were dead. Once customers had an established brand that they trusted, Coda wasn't going to make it. And I feel it's kind of the same way with these startups. Once there are electric vehicles from established brand, electric trucks from established brands, it's going to be super hard for any of these startups to get any market share. So if they have any chance, they've got to get to market now before there are established options.
Yeah, do you think that there's a play to make an electric pickup truck to capture the minds of us Americans, you know, envisioning us driving an electric truck and then produce commercial vehicles out of them? Because I think that might be a, you know, we spoke about this last podcast, just the huge underserved market of electric commercial vehicles. Do you envision any of these startups? We've already seen it with Rivian and Amazon vans. Are we going to see more of this?
That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about it. I mean, we're already seeing it with Rivian, of course. I mean, that is such an enormous market. My partner owns an ice cream distributorship, and he's got like 20 trucks. He's got 15 of like the Mercedes vans, and he keeps pinging me and saying, when can I get a reliable electric option that can serve my needs? You know, I'm all in. You know, he's got freezers that are blocks long, so he has all the electric supply he needs. He could just pop in a row of chargers, and he knows the math. I've done the math with him and showed him how much money it'll save him fleet-wise. So, I mean, that's as soon as the architecture is ready and can be transferred to commercial vehicles, I think that's going to be an enormous market.
He'll never visit a gas station again. Like if he's got a chunky electric supply already, then any business, then all they have to do is charge their cars when it's cheap and overnight. And all of a sudden, that's just a huge line with a big red line through on their budget. It's going to take off. And I think you mentioned this last show or the show before, Tom. You know, these cars are bought with the head, not the heart. You know, whatever badge is on the front, as long as what's it going to cost me per month? What's total cost of ownership? And if it goes wrong, who's going to look after it? So it can't be from a complete, you know, unknown company where it's going to cause issues if you break down. It's a business. You want to get back on the road in hours, not weeks. As long as that you can tick those boxes, I don't care what badge is on the front.
Absolutely. The fleet managers, the bean counters, you know, that's all they get paid to do is reduce, like, you know, when you've got fleets of dozens or even hundreds of vehicles, if you could save a mile per gallon, you know, it's incredible. And imagine, you know, a company that's got 30 or 40 vans that are currently spending, you know, $200 a week in gas for each van, what their savings will be for electric. But it has to be able to serve their needs. If it can't go as far as they need it to, if it can't perform the function it is, then the savings are useless. So, you know, once we get to the point where, and we're close, we're super close to that point now where we're going to have these long range commercial vehicles, there's going to be a groundswell.
So sticking with the electric pickup truck vibe, Nikola founder and chairman Trevor Milton this morning on Twitter announced that Nikola World 2020, where the Badger electric pickup truck will be unveiled, and possibly a 500 watt hour per kilogram battery, which would be incredible if it's true. I haven't seen that mentioned recently, so maybe that's not as a real thing. Who knows? But anyway, that'll be held in December now. I thought it was going to be a lot earlier, but yeah, December 3rd and 4th. He's got it over 2 days, so apparently they have a lot to talk about, you know, over a two-day event. So yeah, that's been a pretty interesting thing to follow. Yeah. So moving on away from pickup trucks to mass market sedans, the Volkswagen ID.4 has been leaked in China, fully uncovered. Tom, did you see this?
Yeah. Well, it's finally been leaked in China. Great. It's been leaked in Portugal and Germany and every other country in the world. Might as well be leaked in China. How many of the spy photos have we seen of the ID4? And I gotta love Volkswagen. They keep putting grills and badges on it from other manufacturers. It's hilarious. It's like they're definitely punking us, and I love that. You know, it reminds me of, I'm a big baseball fan, when a while back when the Mets manager Bobby Valentine got thrown out by an umpire, he went in the dugout and put on a mustache and came back. He came back out onto the field with this big black mustache. He got fined and everything, but like, people loved him for it. The fans loved him. It was in all the newspapers. And I think Volkswagen's got a little bit of that going on with the ID4. Like, they're not hiding the thing at all. They're not putting on the swirly paper wrap and all that stuff. They're just sticking on like a Peugeot badge on the front, and we saw a Kia grill.
It was the Kia front, yeah. Like, we don't like the fake exhausts. We don't mind. Car makers have been doing that for ages on electric cars. Like, the fake exhaust is one thing, but painting on taping on a Kia front was brilliant.
Have you ever seen that, Martin, on any other manufacturer? I've never seen that.
No, they all take it so seriously, and they've got the camouflage and and so Volkswagen just putting a Kia front on it, like, they're fooling no one, but we all talk about it, so, you know, smart move.
Brilliant move. So, yeah, we've seen it in China now, Dom, but we've seen it in, like, six different countries already. I think everybody knew what it was going to look like, and, wish them well with it.
But this one in China, it doesn't have the fake front, or it doesn't have any fake stickers on it. Like, this is the actual vehicle.
The regulatory filing that came out as well, or they had to apply for something that meant it went into an official organization, and there was no longer any way of not hiding it. It's nice we get to see the five different wheels there as well. And
well, they all look the same, though, don't they? Well, yeah. Five different wheels are the same thing.
The five wheels, all the same. But
maybe this is like two wheels with different lighting. I don't know.
I wouldn't even know how to describe the differences between the two. They're the same colors, pretty much the same shape. This is for our non-YouTube audience. And they're literally identical. You could tell the 1 second from the left is like 1 inch bigger in diameter, but that's it.
It looks like it's just two different wheels.
Yeah, completely.
It's a size thing. Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. But yeah,
the car itself looks pretty good though, right?
It looks pretty good. Yeah, I think this is... Oh man, I tweeted about it this week, saying that everybody who is in line, the first 30,000 people who got in line for the ID3, should cancel their order and wait for one of these, because they're coming soon. And you know, I was being flippant, obviously, and you know, it's Twitter, so I was tongue in cheek, but I kind of half meant it as well. Like, you know, it is a bigger size car than the Golf equivalent. So the ID3 is the Golf, and this is the Tiguan or Model Y equivalent, and so. Yeah, it's a bigger car, and it's going to be a more expensive car, but it's that crossover style. And
it's actually nice.
It looks nice. It, you know, it ticks the but it's the right size, it's the right shape. It's going to sell a bucket load of them obviously they will, because if you're in the market for a car this expensive, you're probably going to be eligible for the federal tax credit for the full amount. And so that's going to really bring the price down to something that, as long as the range is good on it, they should sell load, and they can make enough of them. They should sell a bucket load in the US.
Yeah, it's an awesome looking vehicle. I think it's going to do well. It all depends on prices, I think. But the numbers are pretty good as far as like range and charging and all those things. It's just a matter of getting the price to reflect that sort of value.
Right, and then also just the huge depreciation. After you buy the car, it's sometimes not even the initial purchase price that deters owners, but it's the fact that they know it will take iPace, for example, right? You can buy them, granted, you can buy them 20 grand off now, but use their mid $40,000 right now for only 10,000 miles on them. Wow. So, and there's like, go on cars.com. There's plenty of them. I'm sure my EV has them as well. So, you know, I would, I really hope this car is priced appropriately, and it's priced in a way where the price will not fall off a ledge. Because if it does, then the only people buying them will be on lease.
And these will be made in China to start, but they are going to make them for Chattanooga, I believe, will produce the American models at some point.
That looks nice. That's a nice car. Yeah, it looks good. It ticks. It's not exceptional, but it ticks every box. It's solid.
Right. So speaking of revealed Volkswagen ID vehicles, we also saw the reveal of a production version of the ID Rooms, which we think might be the ID5 or the ID6. This is like an early thing. It wasn't completely revealed. It looks like a shot in a factory, and there's like some wrap across the front of it. But you just get an idea of the feel of the size of it, I guess. So it would be a little bigger than the 4 even. So like it's a step up to maybe a midsize crossover. I don't know if you'd classify the ID4 as a midsize or compact, but anyway, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the rooms or possibly ID5 or maybe ID6 there.
Yeah, I'm surprised they put these pictures out because they're official pictures. You can see the banner at the top, which is the factory MEB platform offline ceremony. I'm not sure what an offline ceremony is, but maybe it's just they're driving off the line.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm surprised that this is the ID5 when we don't hear too much about it, but they've wrapped the life out of the thing, so we can't really see what it looks like. I wondered whether that was, I don't know. It's interesting to look at. It could be the ID5.
Yeah. Yeah, the front end definitely looks different from the ID4. So it looks, yeah. Mm. Yeah, we'll see. So what else this week? The Ford Escape plug-in hybrid, the FEV. Its official EPA numbers were revealed. Gets 37 miles of EPA range. Tom, did you see this?
Yes, definitely. It's not a surprise. Ford had been saying that that's where it was going to come in at. And, we talked about this, I think, in last week's show. It's good to see that the plug-in hybrids now are finally getting decent range, all electric range. The average driver in the U.S. drives about 35 miles per day. So, I think that should be the bare minimum where you start at for a plug-in hybrid all electric range. So the average person, would be able to drive this vehicle and use no gas on a daily commute or just daily driving cycle. I think it's a great vehicle. We did a lot of comparisons with it versus the Toyota RAV4 Prime because they're just perfect competitors, and both vehicles, I think, have their advantages. The Ford Escape is lower priced, so that's going to be available for a wider segment of the population. The RAV4 Prime offers a little bit more with all-wheel drive. It's got a little bit further driving range. It's got a lot more power. It's a lot more of a powerful vehicle. It can tow a lot. I'm not sure about the Ford's towing capability. I don't think that's been published yet. But, it's going to serve a lot of people's needs. It's the right size class of a vehicle. And like we said, there's still a lot of people that are not ready for a BEV. This plug-in hybrid is a great way to get them into an EV to see that, hey, this is not some kind of crazy, weird thing that I'm afraid of. Drive it for a couple of years, and then possibly the next vehicle would be all electric.
And Kyle, you have the non-pluggable hybrid version of this vehicle already at your place now. So, have you had a chance to drive that much? How's it feel?
Yeah, I drove it up from home to the track yesterday, and then back here and just around town a little bit. The car itself is great. Like, material usage is really nice. It's very spacious, pretty fast. Like, I have no complaints about this car. Beautiful glass roof. It's actually quite impressing me, even down to little things like the key. I mean, this is Ford's nicer key, but like, that's a nice looking key, and it's heavy and it feels premium. And for a non-premium car, it's relatively premium. So I'm excited for the plug-in version. I was kind of hoping this would have the plug on it, of course. I think they're going to sell tons of these things, especially as Martin said and Tom said, just price point wise, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, there's going to be loads of people that do want the four-wheel drive of the RAV4 Prime. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some cold areas that's a non-negotiable, and they want the all-wheel drive. But there's plenty of areas where you just want the is this front or rear-wheel drive?
Front.
But just the two-wheel drive, front-wheel drive of this at a great price. And this is, remind me, eligible for the full tax credit?
Believe it might be a little
slightly less. It's
like it gets 6,500. 6,800. Okay.
But still, it puts you, I imagine, again, not having an inside knowledge of the kind of US car prices, I imagine it puts it not far away from the normal hybrid version, probably like a couple of $1,000 or what, to get the plug and the battery.
It's actually either matches or slightly less expensive.
Buy this one. Get the one
in the same trim, the SE. I believe the base version is the SE, not the lowest version that you can get the Escape in. So the SE versus the SE plug-in hybrid, I believe this actually is slightly less.
Is that after incentives or
after the incentives, Dom?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, again, if you're in the market for a car that's expensive, it probably applies to you. So just get this. Get this one. It's
absolutely
great. You know, what a great, fantastic. Although, I did have a listener, not on our YouTube page, but email me separately to say, why are you guys raving about plug-in hybrids when they do exactly the same range as a 10-year-old Volt? And I had no good comeback to that. Maybe the second generation, like the 2013 Volt, was official like 38 range or something. And it's like, well, they kind of had a point. You know, fast forward 7 years, and we're complimenting cars for doing exactly what it did back then. So
yeah, but think about what BMW is doing right now, where every single one of their plug-in hybrids will have at least 100 kilometers of WLTP range. Mercedes, this doesn't come to the US, but I saw it in Frankfurt, wild. They have a plug-in hybrid diesel with like a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack with CCS fast charging. It's the GLE 350DE. Now put that on the back of the car. That's a cool concept.
That just sounds expensive. You have the expense of the electric system, and then diesel engines are more expensive than regular gas engines, and then it's a Mercedes product. So yeah, yes. I want to
cheap
see that
doesn't come to mind anywhere with that car. It is going to be quite hefty. But I just thought, like, I was just looking around, like, look at this GLE. It's nice CCS plug. What?
Right. Yeah, great.
Awesome. So I guess let's move along a little bit. Lucid Air in production, guys, will be presented online on September 9th. So if you're looking for another, hopefully super efficient, long-range EV sedan, Lucid's going to bring it. And Tom, you're up to speed on the Lucid things. What's going on here?
Yeah, so we actually have seen it already, even though this is like the formal presentation. I think I might even take a little credit for this. Back about a month ago, Lucid tweeted out a picture of the Air within the announcement that they were going to make the vehicle available in the UAE. And I looked at the tweet, and I quickly pulled up their concept pictures and kind of compared them, and noticed that was not their concept vehicle that they posted in their tweet. And after studying it for a little bit, I reached out to Lucid and kind of asked them, hey, you know, what's up with this? I see the ADAS section in the front bumper. That wasn't on the concept. The rear view mirrors are different. And I kind of got, well, you know, we're not supposed to say this, but that might be the production vehicle. So we wrote a article up on Inside EVs about it. Yeah, that's it right there. That's it. That's the production Air. And so, you know, we've kind of seen it, but we'll get to see the whole, the whole thing in September. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, I've always liked the Lucid Air. I've sat in a vehicle. I've ridden it. It's a really, really cool car. And I'm hoping that they make it. I know the coronavirus shutdown has really hurt some of the startups. You know, maybe the less secure startups. I mean, you look at the Faraday and Lucid and Byton to an extent. It's really, really punished these companies that were kind of just kind of getting along as it was. So I hope that they're all able to bounce back from this. I know that Lucid was really looking forward to their New York City debut of the Air at the New York Auto Show. I had set up a bunch of meetings with them, and I was looking forward to getting some exclusive time with the car. And, that when that was all canceled, they were just kind of like, oh, now what do we do? You know, this was their huge coming out party. And, I actually felt bad for them So now they're doing it this way, and hopefully they're not going to be delayed too much. Looks like they're going to be ready to start producing vehicles by year's end out in Casa Grande, Arizona. The factory is phase one, I think, is going to be complete in 4 or 5 months. And at that point, they can start producing cars. I don't know what rate, but, you know, so they're not too far behind their original plans.
We need to get some drones out there at the factory site, see how that's progressing.
Actually, we could probably arrange that. You're allowed to fly drones around there, and a good friend of mine lives nearby and is a drone pilot. So we might, we should maybe have him do a little thing for the Inside EV's YouTube channel.
That would be cool, because we see so many over anything Tesla does that, you know, if you fly slightly below the radar, pardon the pun there with drone flying, but if you are Lordstown or Lucid and, you know, you haven't got a company boss who is venting their fury on Twitter, mentioning no names, you are, you know, I think you're really onto a winner here, because Lucid as well, I was off my radar until you guys told me recently about all.
Oh, it's got to be on the radar.
Efficiency, yes. The technology, but very quietly, very competently, just getting on with it. And that makes me majorly excited for this car. I mean, it just looks stunning. And if it could.
Well, here's the thing everyone forgets. Peter Rawlinson, who runs the company, is engineered the Model S, right? He is there. Pretty much everyone else there is ex-Tesla. They know their stuff. Peter Hockholdinger runs their factory and all of their production. He basically came in when Model 3 had all the problems, fixed everything up, and got it going. So they know what they're doing. He was also responsible for Audi Q5 and I think Q7, but had the highest quality production out of any automobile factory in Germany under him. Like that, you know, they're building some really high quality stuff. So I think they have the right team. The product's insane. Tom, like you had mentioned, spent a lot of time with it. I was able to spend a lot of time with it and the team, and it's just awesome. And I'm really excited for this launch. It's no one's thinking about it, but it's going to take everyone by storm just when they see the specs.
Well, I hope so. That's the thing with Lucid. They've got a lot of, you know, things nailed down, all right, but they haven't really captured the public's imagination. I mean, there's nothing. It's an okay style. It's a little different than what we're used to, but it doesn't. You know, it's not bringing the house down.
Right. Well, I think if they can hone their technology with the Air, and then I think they have 7 models planned. And I think that's where we're going to start to see maybe their expansion, because the Air in general, I mean, if you look at the market for executive sedans, it's not that big in the U.S.
No.
You know, we've all moved to SUVs, but I think it's smart for them to start here, start small in a manageable size and fleet. Sure. And then bring on a new model relatively quickly thereafter that will capture more people's imagination.
And this does have some good specs in it. And speaking of specs, actually, I skipped this earlier. I want to talk about the Tesla Model S has finally achieved a 400-mile EPA range. Now, this is the same 100-kilowatt-hour pack that they've had since late in 2016, the Performance 100D came out. And then the regular 100D came out in 2017. And at that time, it was rated for 335 miles. And so the same pack, that size of the pack, has got an extra 20% of range, so 67 more miles. That's pretty amazing. You saw this news, right, Martin?
I did, but Tom wrote the story for us. So I think I should defer to him first, and
sure.
I can come back and offer some wayward opinions at the end of it.
That's right. Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, the basic gist of the article, I think, was that there was no way Elon was going to let another car company come out with an EPA range rating of 400 miles before he did. And it appears as though Lucid is going to have a 400-mile EPA range rating. So, you know, the orders were in, get me a 400-mile range rating. And you got to love that Tesla just keeps improving their product. You know, it's... You know, who else is doing that? You know, and it's kind of, you know, part of the allure of Tesla and why, you know, they suck so much of the oxygen out of the room. You're talking about why isn't anybody paying attention to Lucid? Well, it's because of what Tesla's doing and how they constantly, you know, revise their vehicles, make them better. They're always in the news. I guess it doesn't hurt that you've got a CEO that, you know, Twitter maniac, you know, that gets even more attention. But, you know, the fact that they wouldn't give up until they got this 400-mile range rating, they tried earlier in the year, and I think the EPA came back and said, no, we're going to only certify it at 391. And that's when Elon said he pulled the logs and they had left the key in the car overnight, and that made it lose, you know, about 10 miles of range. And the EPA came back and said, nah, we didn't do that, you know. And Elon said, yes, you did. We have the logs and you're lying. And now all of a sudden, somehow it's rated at 402 miles. And I don't think Tesla made any changes to the car. So it kind of lends to the argument that Tesla was right, that the EPA did something wrong when they rated it last time and it actually sucked some of the energy out overnight. Because that's what when the EPA checks the cars, the way they do is they fully charge the car up and then they let it sit overnight. And then they begin the range testing in the morning. So if a key was left in the car, if some of the systems were active that shouldn't normally be active overnight, it could easily, you know, use that much energy to make it lose, in this case, 11 miles of range. So it appears that's what happened, because I don't think they made any other changes since that last range rating.
Right. And this affects cars that were built since January. And if you scroll down the article too, you can see the different systems that they've improved and things they've changed to achieve that range, because they're always making small changes or big changes.
Yeah. And mass reduction, new wheels. Yeah.
Right.
It's the Raven with the aero wheels, basically.
So the Tempest wheels. There you go.
Tempest aero wheels.
And they mentioned regen and supercharging. That won't.
But it was also interesting, some of the things they learned manufacturing the Model 3 and Model Y, some of the weight savings they made there, they've also somehow applied to the Model S, and I think they said X as well. But so they didn't really get into details about that. So now I really kind of want to see someone like Sandy Monroe tear down a new Model S to see what's going on, because they've made changes to that chassis since they began. I think it was like in 2013 or 14 hearing that they had taken 200 pounds out of the car somehow, but there was no press about it. They hadn't gone public with it, anything. One of the PR people kind of slipped that to me at one point.
Well, I've forgotten about the smallest battery, because I was thinking about the 60 kilowatt hour, which was EPA rated for something like 210, 215.
Right. Yeah, I think it was 216 EPA 60.
Right, back in the day. So, and that was at a 60 kilowatt hour pack. And I'd forgotten about the 40 that no one bought. But
yes,
you know, they did make some low range cars. But to counter the criticism that I get sometimes on my podcast of, oh, you talk about Tesla too much. Yes, agree partially. But also, they've taken a car. What was that? 2014, 2015 car, the 60 kilowatt hour. And now, effectively, their cars, you can buy that car that did 200 miles. And now with admittedly a bigger battery, but not a double size battery, doing double the mileage. It's just seriously impressive engineering.
Well, you've never seen anything like this from a traditional automaker, right? It's 7 years, new car, ground up, and then we just roll with that. And maybe you do a life cycle impulse, LCI is what BMW calls it, like a refresh, you know, 3 or 4 years into that model line.
Right.
But what, you know, I'm just excited for a real legit battery pack in Model S now. You know, we're working with 2015, 16 technology in this S. It still cannot take advantage of the supercharger's 250 kilowatt full maximum speed of charging. Although I will say 90 kilowatt hour packs are doing like 180 kilowatts. We've seen close to maybe 200 on the 100 packs. So they're definitely improving the older charging logic, but you still can't take full advantage of your best tech, and a Model 3 can. That to me, that's just a huge gap. I can't wait to get new battery tech in Model S and just watch it just blow everyone out of the water. I hope. Yeah,
the cells are different, and the architecture of the pack is a little different from the S and X to the 3 and the Y. So there's some gains that they need, that they've made in those new cars, that they need to apply to the older vehicles. But I don't think they're going to do that. They're going to, you know, the Model S and X are just going to go away at some point and be replaced, hopefully be replaced with a new product, which will be, you know, I think it would be as a big a step change as the three was from the S. You know, this will be again like,
yeah.
Whatever comes next, expect it to be pretty great.
We saw the news this week that Tesla and Panasonic signing a new 3-year agreement, which, you know, includes investment in Gigafactory from Panasonic, because that footprint has stayed the same for a long time, but also an agreement of how many cells Tesla would buy. And that was always the case of when on the earnings calls, occasionally someone who didn't, you know, was sort of maybe less informed would say to Elon, you've got the new form factor 2170s in the 3 and the Y. Why are you still using these 18650s in the S and the X? And he'd kind of take a deep breath and tell this person, well, because we have a contract to buy them from Panasonic, and we're good at making them, but also we can't just say, oh, we want the new stuff now, because we have those agreements. And I saw the news this week that wasn't specific on any kind of particular cells, but I did wonder, if that this new agreement then phases out older technology and then they move towards new. We didn't get too many details on that, but it would make sense if that was.
The older cells are made exclusively in Japan. So,
yeah, and Tesla agreed to buy this agreement every year.
This agreement only covered the Gigafactory situation, as far as I could tell. I didn't see anything about, you know, long-term commitments to buy cells of the older variety.
So maybe the S and the X with that new battery pack, which is definitely not happening according to Elon, but it is, they're finally going to get cells made slightly closer to home. We don't know, but that would be nice.
All right, we'll find out more on battery day when that happens,
which is whenever, even though it's virtual, so it could happen at any time.
Right, it might just happen now. We could just get a notification, Tesla's live.
when did Nikola World say it was going to happen?
Oh, I don't know. When they've finished demanding that journalists get fired, I imagine.
Yes. Oh, gosh. We probably shouldn't talk about this. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about it.
No. It's fine.
You can check out Trevor Milton's.
No one will ever want to do an interview with Nikola ever again.
No journalist ever wants to open that door again.
Right. So we want to wrap up here pretty quick. So let's just hit a couple stories real quick. Lyft, you know who Lyft is, I guess, the Uber alternative, has said they will switch to 100% electric cars by 2030, which, excited? Is that great? I don't know. I'm disappointed. I think that's not especially ambitious, and I didn't see any news about how they're going to help people, their drivers, make that switch themselves.
That's the big thing. How are you going to convince a crowdsourced driver using their own car to buy and use an electric car? You could just knock them off your platform if they're not driving EVs. They're piloting a really cool program in Denver, which is you sign up, you get a Kia Niro EV that you rent, essentially, but it comes with free unlimited charging at Electrify America as a Lyft driver. And you just drive it like it's your own and return it back to the lot when you're done. And they said it's been hugely popular. And if you look at like any plug share picture at the Denver Electrify America sites, it's just all Kia, those things. It's all Kia Niros just plugged in charging. I thought that was a great idea. So maybe Lyft is just going to say, if you want to be a driver, you have to use our cars.
It's like the old taxi business now again. That's how, you know, taxi fleets would run. You know, my dad was in the taxi business. So he would hire, you know, he had like 4 or 5 cars, and he would hire, you know, drivers to drive them, keep them going 24 hours if possible. And they would make it like a 60-40 split. You know, we pay the gas and they get 40% of their take. So this is like a kind of similar situation. You know, you're paying your monthly or weekly fee for the car, and you're just picking it up and driving it, but it's not really your car, but you're making money with it.
So I have a question. Will there be drivers in 2030 in Lyft cars?
Yes.
But do you think we will have begun to do driverless car sharing services in certain areas?
Just about starting.
Yeah.
But I really think it's going to take a little bit longer than what everyone's saying to get this driverless stuff going and implemented. But I do think for most of these driverless alternatives, you know, if we have autonomous vehicles, they will be electric for ride sharing services. But once that happens, and once it goes on a large scale, to your point, Tom, you know, it's just that it would not make sense to have a human in that car spending their day driving around at that point. There's no need.
I mean, if you're a customer and you want a car, you don't want to necessarily deal with the driver if you don't need to deal with the driver, and you don't have to worry about tipping. You don't have to worry about awkward conversations or anything, you know, like strange. You can just have a car show up and jump in. You know,
I think by 2030 we will absolutely have areas where driverless car sharing is in service. I certainly don't expect it to be everywhere, but I think somewhere around the 2027, 2028 is when we're going to start to see small pilot programs. And by the early 2030s, I think it's going to be expanding across, you know, many areas of the world.
Well, I could see that, but I don't see them removing my Tesla steering wheel and letting that thing go and drive people around.
Yeah. Well, let me be the naive optimist and say 2025. I think that's what Mary Barra was saying the other day, even though the company that they, who they have in San Francisco, they have a ride sharing company and they're going to be producing cars for it. But they said when that vehicle launched last fall, that by the time it's produced, which is like, I think the end of next year, that it'll be able to do their self-driving, at least in the San Francisco area, because they have that really well mapped.
Well, the problem that I see with these companies that are taking a one city approach is if you look at Waymo, for example, I think they're doing a pretty good job where they're testing in one market, but they plan to launch in multiple markets so they can just capture everything, right? If you're right. just doing San Francisco, there's no exclusivity agreement. Waymo can just step in and do it there too. And because they'll have the scale, they can do it cheaper. So I think that I forget the name of that company in San Francisco, but Alex Roy has some really good takes on this. If you listen to the AutonoCast, and it's all about how deploying these types of autonomous ride sharing services are totally going to affect everyone. And this one city approach is just not the answer.
It's Cruise is the name of the company.
Yes. Cruise. Yes.
Yeah. I need to go over the materials. I didn't realize we're going to be talking about it today because I was thinking they had a pretty good approach to coming to market, but yeah, I need to go over that again and just see what their plans are. So before we go, I just want to hit really quick on the Polestar has opened production for orders of its Polestar 2.
You configured, didn't you, Carl?
Oh yeah. I want mine in that nice gray color with the performance package, gold seat belts, and the big Olin suspension and brakes, and oh, I'm so excited. If only that car did not slope down in the back and I could fit my dogs inside, I would seriously order it right now.
That's a fastback, not a station wagon, I guess.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Right, I want a Polestar wagon. Basically, I want a Volvo V60 electric with all the fast stuff on it.
Yeah.
So did you do the actual configuration?
Yes, I did. I think it was $65,000, which is basically what I paid for my Model 3. And it's a way nicer car, in my opinion. I mean, granted, you lose some of the tech out of the Tesla and stuff like that, but it's a nicer place to be, if you ask me. I think it's a very competitive price for a performance car.
So I went through all the steps. And if you go to the Inside EVs forum, to the Polestar section and the Polestar 2 subsection, I've got a thread where I walk through all the different steps. If you're curious about how that works, you know, you jump on and you plug in your location and it pulls up the stores and you can choose one of those stores.
Yeah, it's basically New York or San Francisco, right? New York's
basically
LA. I think there was two on the West Coast, one on the East.
That's right. And there's, three on the West Coast. There's two in the San Francisco area, Marin and another area. You can go in and choose your colors. I chose Moon. I'm not actually ordering the car because, I have a car. Mine came up to like a lot more than that because I chose the big fancy wheels and had to play the performance package to get that. I think it was like 73,000 something.
I could have been looking at the post tax credit number and not have realized it because I definitely started with a 6 and I'm pretty sure I checked everything that I thought I would want, which was everything.
Did you choose the big wheels and get the performance package?
Oh, yeah. I got to have that because it comes with gold seatbelts. What's cooler than gold seatbelts in your car?
He needs a gold seatbelt. He's got to
have gold. It was. I did a review on the Volvo V60 plug-in hybrid Polestar thing, and that was the highlight. It has gold seatbelts. That's just the best.
Has a gold matching gold Brembo brake calipers as well. So did you order also the you got floor mats? I guess you have to. I don't. That was really strange. You know, having to order floor mats like as an option.
I didn't do any of the accessories.
Okay.
So
I
don't know.
I apologize on behalf of Europe for making you buy floor mats. I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you. And for having to buy rear windshield wipers and everything else on your cars.
We spec a lot of stuff that you would look at and think that just should come with the car.
So I ordered the tow bar too. I threw that out because it had some weird
thing. I did as well because it flips down electronically. I thought that was really nice.
You can't see it. It was discreet. And all the Nordic countries will have, they've got a tow anyway, Norway, et cetera. So they'll be shipping nearly all of them with tow bars over here.
I'm just so pumped about this. This is going to be such a great product. And every time you see one on the road, you know, it's just going to be like that guy bought the cool one, not the one that you buy with, you know, your numbers. It's not the bean counter car. It's the emotional decision car.
Right. So, hey, so Kyle, come over to the Inside EVs forum and let us know about your car at the Polestar 2 section. Because I'd like, or if anybody else out there has ordered one, we'd really love to get your feedback and hear about your experience going through this whole process, buying process.
Right. I'd be curious to see what people who have actually ordered the car think. I just spec'd mine out, but I didn't click the order button because I can't fit the dogs in there. But if it was a, you know, a straight roof all the way back, that's what I would be driving.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. It's been great. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. And Kyle is at Out of Spec. I'm Dominic_Y. So click and subscribe and tap that bell notification or bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.